We're going to look at a system for preventing burnout and how to use that. So really, we'll give you opportunities, since there's just a small group of you, to talk to each other in some of this and to have a practice round. It's an acronym, so it's easy to remember. And what I like to tell people is, when you're looking at working with other people and not just working with machines or trees or something else, working with other people, you've got to keep these things in mind, that every person we work with, whether it's your spouse or whether it's your coworkers in your regular job or a ministry at church, everybody needs these six essential elements. And the six essential elements we're going to talk about, this is copyrighted material, so if somebody's listening to this on tape, don't be stealing the stuff here. Use it for your ministry, but make sure you give credit back to where it's due. I call it the ITAFER system. And so the very first step is, when you're on your ministry team, if people feel like they've been recruited on your team, instead of really being invited on your team, they're going to feel like they're being used. And that's the very first sign that that burnout could be on its way. When you've been recruited to something that you're feeling they're just using me, they really don't want me. It could be anybody. It could be any warm body. But if people feel like they've been invited because of something they specifically have to offer, they have a specific gift in this or a real passion for it, it's less likely they're going to burn out in a very short while. But if they are on your team, there's still opportunity for burnout, just because what we're doing is not necessarily just a volunteer service, but it's real spiritual service, and you can expect certain battles to happen. So how do we prevent that? The very first step is the T, and it's T stands for training. If you want to raise the importance of anything we do in ministry, train it. If it's important enough to do, it's important enough to train. Our big enemy of training is the assumption. Just assume anybody can do it. In student ministry, to assume, we've all been in junior high, so everybody knows how to work with junior high. Or the assumption, I was in high school once, I can work with high schoolers. Well, I don't know about your high school experience, but my high school experience did not prepare me to work with today's high schoolers. My high school or junior high experience didn't prepare me to work with anybody human, really. So you've got to look at training as being the important element. When Jesus went and called the disciples, first of all, you don't see Jesus doing a sermon, say the Sermon on the Mount, and saying, if you're interested in what you heard me say, then go sign up, for fellowship over at the Information Rock. He didn't do that. What he did was he approached people and knew them by name. He knew what was in them and called them to follow him specifically. And that's the first step, that you know you're being called on purpose, that God called you, not just anybody. And so because you're following on purpose, then the first thing you knew, he says, follow me and I will teach you to become fishers of men. I'll teach you a whole new way of fishing. I'll train you. Follow me, and I'm going to train you. And we invite people to be part of our teams, and we assume that just because they're Christians and we're all part of the same church, they automatically will know what to do. We burn people out pretty quickly by not training them. We train on certain things, like, you're trained on how to teach, but are you trained on how to organize a meeting? Are you trained on how to lead in prayer for a group? Are you trained on how to read a passage of Scripture out loud for everybody to hear and understand? Are you trained on some essential elements that you really need to know in ministry? In working with junior hires, do you have any training in some language that's better to use than other language? Do you have some training on some characteristics of the age groups you work with that will be helpful when you're wondering, I have no idea what to do with this 14-year-old. What do you do in this situation? So it's just not the training about how to do what you've been asked to do. It's a broader pattern of training. How do you also communicate with other people in ministry? What's the best way to do that? How do you plan? How do you move forward. Training's the first element. And if we don't train people, you can expect to keep getting the same thing over and over, and that's going to be burnout and fallout. Training becomes so important. If you don't train it, don't expect very much. Everything needs to be trained. So I can kill that point by saying training is first. If you want to prevent team burnout, train your team on how to know what burnout looks like. Yeah, what we're doing in this process today in Leadership Guild is part of training. And so training is essential. It's what Jesus did with the disciples as they walked along. The second element is affirmation. And affirmation is affirming who people are, not what they do. And Chris mentioned this earlier in his general session, that we are looking for what people have on the inside, not just their behaviors and what they do on the outside. In all of the research in human resources, we know that the primary reason people leave their jobs and they leave volunteer service is not because of pay, and it's not because of conflict, and it's not because they don't get recognized. It's because they don't get affirmed just for being who they are. They cite that, I keep coming to work, I came here to work for 15 years, and nobody ever seemed to notice. I could have been gone from church for 6 weeks, and nobody noticed. I didn't show up for student ministry for 2 weeks, nobody noticed. And that idea that affirmation is noticing. Affirmation is seeing what God created in every person. And with some people, particularly working with non-believers, you sometimes have to look for that spark of creation that's in them. To look for what did God put in this person that he wants to nourish and see grow and use. Working with high school students, sometimes you have to look really hard to see, what do I affirm in this kid? What do I find to affirm? So I want to give you an opportunity to affirm each other now. And if you're married, choose someone else to affirm. It might be harder with your spouse. But what I want you to do is just take a second and affirm somebody else. And this isn't saying thank you for what you do. It's affirming either a character trait or integrity or something that you see God doing in them. So this is your practice. And what you said, the most affirming thing was, I look up to you. That's something that you can take away. That's something that helps you to keep going, because there's somebody else on your team who respects how you do, what you do, and how you do it. And you're looking for keeping your team going with fuel. And the fuel, although it may be uncomfortable to do it in a public setting, the fuel is really affirmation. To affirm one another is what we're told in Scripture to do, to encourage one another, and all the more as we see the day approaching. To stimulate one another to love and good deeds. And this is the stimulation. This is the encouragement. This is the fire. The best way to do it is one-on-one, although you guys did it in a group. The best way to do it is one-on-one. The best way to do it is verbal. Sort of the first runner-up to that is to write it to someone and let them know so they can keep it as a sort of a record or a document. There are times when you really need to have that record to remind yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? Well, here, somebody that I work with on my team says they saw this. They recognize this. The people you minister to, the students, also need your affirmation. Because it's hard to get in a habit of doing affirmation, it's just not an easy thing to do. Sometimes it's good to make a list of the people you're serving with and just write what you need to affirm in them, what you see in them. And if you don't see something that you want to can't affirm right now, what are you going to pray that you'll be able to affirm in them? One day, I want to be able to affirm that she's so patient. One day. And I want to pray toward that. And though you can affirm them by letting them know you are praying for them. And this is what I'm praying for you specifically. Affirmation is best when it's specific and it's one-on-one. It's personal. It ties back to training, because we affirm what we've been training to. You affirm that, hey, you remembered some of the training. We affirm, and these tie together from training to affirmation means you're just not blowing smoke with affirmation. You really are getting growing together and your team is working together, and the affirmation matters to the training matters to the affirmation. Which leads to the third step, which is feedback. And in church, we have a hard time giving feedback. We're afraid if we give each other honest feedback, they won't come back. We all think, like, who are you to give me feedback? Feedback really is telling you how you're doing. Feedback helps you grow to the next point. It's the iron sharpening the iron. It moves you, it stimulates you to the next step. One of the reasons that teams have real burnout is nobody gives the team feedback. Nobody sits down with the team and says, we could be better in this area, and then the next time we do such and such, let's try this. It steps you to the next point. And if you keep moving with your team and don't stop and give each other feedback and you don't have general team feedback, expect burnout. It grows you. Imagine going through a semester at school and writing papers and taking tests and never getting them back. Toward the end of the semester, you're kind of going, how am I doing here? Am I going to make... Are you going to pass this thing or not? I was teaching a grad class a couple of years ago and lost one student's papers. Literally everything she turned in, something or another, there was a giant hole somewhere, and I lost every large paper, every small paper. She would do a quiz, and I would lose it out of the stack. At the end of the semester, she's looking at me saying, I don't know if I'm passing this thing, you're going to get a master's degree or not. And I said, I honestly don't know, because I'm going to have to go back and find these things. It's the same in ministry. It's not fair to anybody who's serving to not have feedback. And on your team, if you're serving alongside someone else, you can give them feedback. Our problem is we don't really know how to do it. I've got some things to illustrate that. The first type of feedback, and in church we do this an awful lot, and this is really the first type, and if I can get this out and make a mess here. But, James, let me give you one of these here. But take one. Pass it to Amy. Take one of those home with you, okay? Here, Andy, one's coming for you. All right. I want you to save that. Save it as long as you can, okay? We're going to put that in your pocket.
This is why I can't do.
Yeah, yeah. These were bubbles, and they look pretty, and they're nice, and they sort of the awe factor with it, but you can't keep them. And if you use too many of them, you get really messy. This is compliments. Nice job. Good work. You did a good job with the Bible study with the kids tonight. Nice. Good food. You look good. It doesn't help. Quite honestly, it doesn't hurt, though. It's just like bubbles. You're not going to get damaged by them. But you can't take it home with you. You can't do anything about it to be better the next time. Let's say James does really sits down with the kids and has a super connection with them. And the team sees it and walks away and says, good Bible study. Good job. Well, can he repeat that? It's unlikely, because all he's got is that it was good. But specifically, you want to be able to give feedback in a way that's not just bubbles. Yeah, people like bubbles. There's a soap store on the street in San Francisco that has a bubble machine over it, and people actually go to that street just to stand in the bubble machine. It makes you smile, and it's happy and kind of a giddy thing. But it's not helpful to keep giving compliments. It won't grow you in any way. Now, the next form is this, and grab it. James, if I were to throw this at your head, if it were coming toward you, what would your response be? Better not, yeah. Or, if it hits Andy on the side of the head, good plan, huh? Yeah, well, this is criticism. It almost always hurts. It's a hard ball. It's sometimes you don't even know it's coming. People will nail you with something, and you feel like, I didn't even see that coming. A natural response is if it hits you hard, you want to grab it and turn around and throw it back. That was stupid. And you want to toss back something right back to them. There's no such thing as constructive criticism. It always hurts. You remember it in a way you won't remember the bubbles. You'll want to keep it, and after a while, you want to stockpile some hardballs. And you've got a pile of them ready to toss at will. You will burn team members out by constantly battering them with hardballs. Because all they get is what they did wrong. Not what they, how they can improve. Junior hires and high school kids get battered with them from each other, sometimes from their parents, from school, and from the culture. What they're doing wrong. It's criticism. It doesn't grow them to the next point. If it's coming toward you, we put up our defense mechanisms and you can't even hear it. And then if the same person is constantly throwing the hard balls, you know when you see them coming, you find a way to get out of their way. I don't want to have anything to do with you because here it comes. They'll have little phrases like, I've got a bone to pick with you. Or I've been thinking. And you think, here's the hard ball. Here it comes. The third type is a more appropriate type. Here you go, James. It's coming toward you. Give it back. All right, Andy. Yeah. Hang on to it. Here it's coming. All right. Hang on. Put your hands down. There you go. See, if it hits you even, and you know it's coming, it's not going to hurt you. You won't even mess up your hair. Yeah. Yeah, you'll get static from it. And yeah. But you don't even have to see it coming. But you don't, you know, you don't run away from it. You don't put up your defense mechanism from it. This is critique. And you start to learn that it's for your own good. And you like it. And I can do something with it. And I say, here, James, take this home. And then if you want to give it to somebody else, feel free to do that. But if you don't want to and you just want to make it yours, you can. This is just for me. This was only applicable for me. Critique always has these three words in it. That you always start with these three words in critique. The next time. So you can't do anything about what's just happened. Let's just say that you really could not connect with the kids in a Bible study. You were talking way over their heads. You were going into words they didn't understand. You didn't even understand them, but you had read an article and you thought it'd be really cool to try to use some of that stuff. We all do that from time to time. And the effective way to deal with that is not, wow, that one sucked, but rather, hey, the next time you lead Bible study, consider doing this or try this. The next time, here's a resource that might be helpful. The next time, try. The next time. It's critique that really helps. But you've guys also got to be careful when you give it. Okay? As soon as you're finished doing something, it's the wrong time to offer any kind of feedback, whether it's a compliment, criticism, or critique. Usually when you're finished, say, teaching something or leading something or you've just gotten off the retreat, you know, mostly what you want to do is take a nap and go to the bathroom. You really don't want it. So always ask permission before you give any kind of feedback. Is this a good time? Can I offer you some feedback now? And sometimes you want to say, no, not right now. Most of us give ourselves more feedback than other people do. And if you want to burn your team out or burn out yourself, don't do any of this. Just let people keep going without getting stopped. Just, you know, don't hand back any papers all semester. You'll burn people out really fast. But it ties back again, training, affirmation, feedback. And what's the best kind of feedback to give? The beach ball. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, the best kind is critique. And those words are always in critique. The next time. So what I want you to do is take a second to practice offering each other critique, offering each other feedback. And you're going to assume that the person that you have practiced both ways, that person has just led an activity with the junior hires that bombed pretty seriously. Nobody... The kids, in fact, started leaving the group. How would you offer them feedback on that. Take a practice. Okay. That's good because you were specific enough. If you're going to offer the feedback, be ready to offer some resource that might help. Talk to Jeff. Look at this. Read this. Check this website. Try this. We're growing people together in ministry and on our teams. You'll burn out really fast if you're not growing toward anything. If you think, I'm going to continue to be mediocre, I'm going to continue to be bad here. Doesn't anybody see what I'm doing, that I'm continually bombing here? That will burn you really fast. And we've got to learn how to give it in grace to each other. And remember, you're not going to always want it, but eventually, if you build it in your organization, into what you're doing in ministry, people will start to get used to it. And as a leader, start asking for it. I'd like some feedback. I'd like to be better with how I do this. Please offer this. And I will tell you that I'm even doing this today based on feedback from lots of people who said, why don't you try doing some things visually with illustrating this? People will remember beach balls a whole lot better than they'll even remember the word critique. So we grow and we continually step our game up by feeding each other with honest, good, grace-filled feedback. The next one is the E, which is evaluation. We don't ever evaluate each other, but if we don't stop in our ministries to evaluate the process and evaluate how things are set up and evaluate the overall structure, you'll feel like you're stuck. Feedback is a result of, first of all, fear. I mean, sorry, not feedback, but burnout is a result of fear. You're afraid that they're going to use you up. And there is an element that you're being used in ministry, absolutely. That's part of being a follower of Christ, is giving yourself away, absolutely. But the fear that you'll give yourself away and nobody's going to feed you back, nobody's going to build you back up, is the fear. And that'll lead to exhaustion. And that exhaustion, we lose as soldiers all the time. And so we've got to say, is there an evaluation? Is there something about the way we do things, not just how they do it, but the whole structure that we need to evaluate? A real simple thing to do is at the end of a meeting or at the end of an activity is to sit with your leadership team or the ministry team you're with and say, well, what do we need to stop doing? What do we need to start doing? And what should we continue? And I sometimes put them on a 3x5 card and everybody say, we're in our specific ministry. What should we start? What should we stop? And what should we continue? Ongoing, continual, grace-filled evaluation will give you information so that you don't keep repeating a mess. You don't keep showing up and realizing nobody's there. You don't keep doing it the same way over and over and over. And in our church, we've got to start doing evaluation that's really fast, that's really simple, and you can do something with it. Because if you evaluate and you don't change anything, you've wasted the time of the evaluation. It's like teaching a pig to sing. It wastes your time and frustrates the pig. So keep in mind you're trying to grow to the next step. And it ties back again with training, affirmation, feedback to evaluation. If you do evaluation of the process, but you haven't given feedback, you may work on the structure, but you haven't done anything with the people. And you got to do both of those. If you give feedback, but you've never affirmed, well, first of all, people aren't going to receive that feedback very well because they'll start to say, you don't care about me. If you cared about me, you would train me. If I train you, I affirm you. So it all keeps going back in a circle. Now, the last two are the R's. The first one is recognition. It's different from affirmation. Recognition is acknowledging that a person served, that a person was there, that a person gave some of their time. If affirmation is the reason that people leave service, the lack of recognition is one of the reasons people don't come back again, meaning nobody signs up and says, I'm going to be a junior high leader because Jeff's going to say thank you to me. or Brad's going to acknowledge us in the bulletin, or, you know, at the end of the year there might be a party. You know, nobody signs up for recognition. You sign up for other reasons. And you get asked into ministry for other reasons. But if you don't recognize people, they won't repeat it. Meaning, if we don't recognize people and appreciate their service, they probably won't step up to do almost anything else. Because the lack of recognition in one area of service will keep that person from serving in other areas. I mean, they're unlikely to volunteer for neighborhood ministry, or they're unlikely to volunteer in the Red Cross or Habitat if they're not recognized for giving their time somewhere else. You guys are nodding, so I think you're getting that point. Recognition is that simple thank you. Now, whereas affirmation is best done face-to-face, the best way to do recognition is in writing. And I don't mean on a computer. I mean writing. Writing a thank you note to people you serve with will be the best use of your time. If you want to keep them from burning out and keep yourself from burning out, having an ongoing, regular practice of writing thank you notes. Psychologists call it the attitude of gratitude. If you don't want to burn out, think through, keep a journal even of people you want to thank who've assisted you in ministry, who've grown you, who are praying for you. How did you get there? Who walked with you along your path of faith? Who brought you to Jesus that as you're serving these students now, you might want to write them a thank you note and say, thanks, you got me here today, and here's the impact. It's recognition is not just in your team, but it's everybody who's impacted you. And how often do you thank the students you're working with for their presence or for their attitude or being really cool and really fun to work with? Or some of the ones that are more difficult, you know, what can you find to thank with them? Thanks for challenging me. Thanks for keeping me on my toes. Thanks for your presence here. It reminds me that not everybody speaks my language. So finding the thanks prevents the burnout. And if I were summing up and saying, if you want to prevent team burnout, step one, develop ways to thank people on a consistent, systematic, regular basis. More than anything else you'll do, this will keep your team cohesive and keep you from burning out. Now, the last R ties back to all of them. From training to affirmation to feedback, evaluation, recognition, and now the last one is reflection. To take the time to reflect about what you're actually doing in ministry. C.S. Lewis said, I had the experience, but I missed the meaning. And what you want to do with reflection is look back. What? So what? I met on Wednesday night with a group of junior high students. Was that all there was to it? So what? Oh, what difference did that make in their lives, in my life? What did I learn about following Christ? What did I learn about the kingdom? What did I learn about salvation? What did I learn about God's word? So what? And the second question is, now what? A great missiologist named Carol Davis believes that the greatest threat to American Christianity is not Buddhism or Islam or even atheism, but she believes the greatest threat is Hinduism. And she says that Hindu thought has crept into our everyday American lives in such subtle ways that you'll even hear pastors and Christian leaders say things like, well, it is what it is. And that very phrase is a Hindu thought that what you see is all that there is to it. But the very essence of being a follower of Christ, that it isn't what it is. The essence of our service is not it is what it is. The essence of our following Christ is what it is bigger and broader and wider than only God knows the result of me bringing Cokes to a Wednesday night youth fellowship. That it's not what it is. It's so big, I can't even put my arms around it. And following Christ in real reflection says, okay, I went and all I did was sit on the grass with a bunch of high school students. What difference did that make? And you start to think, wow, what could this mean? in the life of a kid. What's that mean for me? And you've got to be really intentional about taking the time to say, so what, and then now what? What does that lead me to do as a result of this? What do I need to study? What do I need to prepare for? How should I look at this real thing? Robert Browning said, every bush is aflame with God, and those with spiritual eyes see him there, and the rest just pick the blackberries. And so in our activities in ministry, we could look at, I just led a life group. Well, so what? Did that impact anybody's life? How did that change you? Whenever we interface with God's Word, doesn't that have some impact on us? We kneel or bow our heads and pray with each other. Doesn't God promise that He's there? What's the so what of that? And then what's the now what of that? The words to lose in the reflection category, first word is just. Because we're never just a youth leader. We're never just a worship leader. We're never just a volunteer. But there's something bigger when we reflect on it. In 1 Peter, we're told that we are a royal priesthood, a holy nation, called by God from darkness into light. And when we serve with junior hires and high school students, you are touching their lives for all of eternity. You are having this impact that could change the world. That sitting on the grass next to you might be a student who comes from a different culture and a different language, but who might be the only person who can effectively reach their culture. So what? So reflection and having an ongoing process of never walking away from ministry or a retreat or an activity or a training without saying, so what? Now what? Very briefly, I was joining a church, a part of a church in San Francisco a few years ago, and I had gone through an interview process to talk about some things I liked to do and wanted to do. And one of the things that I actually wrote down I liked to do was cook. I was trying to learn how to be a better cook, and so I thought, they have a kitchen at church, it might be fun. So they called one day for me to help them cook in the kitchen for a missions conference. They said about 600 college students would be coming, and they're going to eat dinner and then hear a speaker. Would you help cook dinner? So I showed up on a Saturday afternoon to help them cook, and they showed me bushel baskets of green beans. And the woman who was coordinating it said, those green beans need to be snapped, and that's what you're going to serve in 4 hours. So I go to the nursery, and I actually got a rocking chair, and I took the rocking chair out in the parking lot under a tree, and this other woman who was with me, she got a rocking chair, and she sat in the tree, and we started snapping the green beans, and we started talking to each other. I'm from the South, and you can only snap beans if you are rocking in a rocking chair, so preferably on a front porch drinking iced tea. But the woman who was with me, I'm getting to know her, and I said, so what do you do? And she said, I'm the head of the radiology unit at UCSF Med Center. And I said, really? That's kind of an important job. She said, this is my only day off in 3 months. And I said, and you're spending it snapping beans for a church dinner that's going to last about an hour? And she said, yeah, I think it's kind of important. And I've worked around church a long time, but I've never really thought of how important that was. I think the important stuff is preaching or leading worship or a Bible study. This is important. And the way that she said it, I knew she really meant it. And I said, so Judy, why is this important? And she said, you know, all those students are going to be out serving all day today, and they're going to be hungry when they come back in, and then they're going to sit and listen to someone speak who's going to see if they'll respond to God's call to go on the mission field one day. And she said, I kind of want to think that my green beans might make their stomach stop growling, and my green beans might fill them up enough so that they're not thinking about being hungry, but rather they're thinking about what God's saying to them. And I want to think that one of those students might eat my green beans, and one day they might be a missionary someday, and I'll get to meet them and say, my green beans helped. And I looked at her and said, wow, well, we should snap better then. And We snapped faster and better, and it touched me in a way that all these years later, I remember her words exactly. But what that was clear reflection, that the service may be small, but so important. Bringing Cokes to a youth meeting, getting the ice, greeting the kids, sitting with them, holding the babies, guiding the cars in the parking lot, whatever that is, that's a green bean. And sure enough, 600 students came through and ate our food. And if the food you cooked, you also got to serve. And I remember standing there serving green beans. About 2 years later, I'm still volunteering to do that. I cooked every year. I've missed 1 year lately of serving green beans. And this couple came through and they looked at us, and we're an interesting couple because Judy is African-American and I'm kind of a big white guy. And they said, "We remember you guys. You were here 2 years ago when we decided to go overseas and serve." We said, so where are you? I said, "We're in Libya." And Judy nudged me and said, "My green beans." That's reflection. And one day a student comes back, or one day a person who follows Christ comes back and says, "You know, I'm leading Bible study myself now, or I'm leading a youth group somewhere myself." Those are your green beans. And that's where reflection. If you want to stop burnout from happening for your team, give lots of opportunities to find the green bean moments. Lots of times to say, "So what? Now what?" And help people to reflect. So I've given you a little system here. Invite people in for the right reasons. Train, affirm, give feedback, evaluate the programs and the processes, recognize frequently, often, in writing is best, and then reflect. And those elements will keep your team from burning out, because you don't just wait on the leader to do those things. You do it with each other. You do it with the people you're serving and the people you're serving with. And then you do it back up to your leader, because your leader needs to have feedback too. Your leader needs to have you reflect for them. Your leader lead up as well as lead laterally and lead down. Any questions or comments on this? I have a handout with these things on it, and I'll give them to you. Thoughts? Anything else I can add for you? How about some feedback? What would have made the session better for you? Thank you all. I hope it's helpful. My email contact is on there. CreativePotentialConsulting.org is my website. If I can help you in ministry, offer some suggestions on how to do any of these things in your ministry specific, I'm available to do that. If I can be helpful in any way, please let me know. I thrive on the opportunity to serve other ministries. And because I'm very clear that God did not call me to work with junior hires or high school students, having been a high school minister before, I know it's not, you know, where I am, but I would love to be able to support people who do, because it's critical. And I live in a neighborhood where I see junior hires and high school kids that are absolutely abandoned and lost, and definitely need people like you who care about them. So thanks for what you do. I want to affirm that you're in what I consider the front line of real ministry. So thanks for doing what you do, and thanks for showing up today. Appreciate it.